Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, there's been a couple of things in the news here over the last week or so, and it got me thinking, man, we've got to get Dr. Merdad Kia from the University of Montana back on the show. He is just one of the best there is and always gives such great insight, especially here as a lot of people are doing road trips heading into the holidays. What a time to kick back a little bit and hear from the great professor. Dr. Kia, thanks for freeing up some time for us here, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and all your listeners. It's really a pleasure to be with you on the day before Thanksgiving. And you are right, Aaron. It's been a while that we have talked, and quite a bit has happened, especially after the 12-day war between Israel and Iran. And we can go over a little bit of what has happened since.
Yeah, the couple of things that caught my eye in the news. One, the big one, we just had the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia was at the White House Oval Office meeting with President Trump. So we can talk trade, we can talk peace in the Middle East, the Abraham Accords, that front. Well, maybe let's just start there with about a minute or so before we go to our first break here, and then we'll talk more after that. What do you think the big takeaway was from the MBS meeting in the White House?
I think the MBS meeting signals the emergence of Saudi Arabia as the most powerful Arab country in the region. MBS is a very ambitious leader, and he wants to make sure that Saudi Arabia will be also a military and economic power, even beyond the time when they run out of oil. So all this massive investment he's calling for by United States, European allies, is basically to turn Saudi Arabia in a new direction. And of course, the biggest threat to his position is the Islamic regime in Iran.
Yeah, and then there was another story that kind of caught my eye, and I forget where I saw it. I can't remember if it was in a conservative publication like the Daily Wire or the Daily Caller or a more foreign policy-focused piece, but it had something to the effect of about how the regime back in Iran, the Tehranian regime, which, of course, you are very critical of, the terrorist regime currently controlling the people in Tehran, but how they are afraid. And that got me thinking, oh, yeah, what have those guys been up to? 30 seconds before the break, what have those guys been up to?
Yeah, they are mortified by recurrence of a confrontation with Israel, especially if that confrontation is backed by United States the way it happened last time. And they're hiding. They are hiding. The Supreme Leader is hiding. And the rest of them are trying to scramble to see what they should do if something like this happens again.
All right. Well, that's a good scene setter for both of those topics. We can talk more, too, just about, you know, we can even go back, talk about the Iraq War, the passing of Dick Cheney, get Dr. Kia's thoughts on all of that and more. Plus, we'll take your phone calls, 406-294-0970. Back with Dr. Merdad Kia from the University of Montana right after this.
This year.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Dr. Merdad Kia is not only one of the most popular professors and has been for a long time on the University of Montana campus, he also escaped Iran before the terrorists took over that country and have been in charge ever since, essentially. But he's also the director of the Central and Southwest Asian Studies Center at UM as well. Dr. Kia, before I take us in any different direction here, I've got about four different things that I kind of wanted to cover with you here this morning. Where do you want to start?
So I think we can, as you stated correctly, with this situation, you can go into several directions, basically. I think they are all interconnected, so we might as well start with your focus today, which is the situation in Iran after the 12-day war with Israel and, to a degree, with the United States. That attack on targets, on nuclear targets, on military targets, supreme leader has been more or less hiding very deep under the ground, and he has only showed up a few times to deliver fast speeches, but he's surrounded by security, and they whisk him out very quickly after he has delivered his speeches. It might be of some interest for your listeners to know that he now has a new title among the people of Iran. They call him Ali, you know, his first name, A-L-I, and Ali Moosh, Ali the Rat, because rats usually hide very deep under the ground, and this guy is basically mortified that the same thing that happened to his military leadership might happen to him now. So that's one issue. They have all given up their cell phones and anything electronic because they're afraid that Israel and the United States might actually detect where they are and they might be attacked again. That's one thing, Aaron. The other thing is that I think the huge blow to the regime in Iran has been to its proxies. Hamas has been decapitated, though I have to say that it is still trying to flex muscle in Gaza, but its military potential have been significantly diminished. Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Iranian regime is trying to reconstitute it, but Israel just struck just a couple of days ago and killed its military commanders. So that was a warning once again to Iran that Israel is watching the situation in Lebanon very closely, and any attempt to reconstitute Hezbollah will be dealt with immediately. And of course, the third proxy was the Houthis in Yemen, and they have been more or less very silent. They were hit very badly by Israel and the United States, and the result has been that the Houthis have both basically decided to stand on the sidelines.
Well, and a few years ago, I mean, you would have known who the Houthis were. I knew who the Houthis were, especially on my last tour when I was over in the Arabian Peninsula area. But your average person, your average, you know, news consumer may not have even known who the Houthis were. And yet, in the last, you know, in the last year of the Biden administration, it seemed like everybody knew who the Houthis were because this, you know, tribesmen from Yemen were essentially bringing global commercial traffic to a halt with the chaos they were causing over in that region.
Exactly. And they were basically armed by Iran to interrupt, basically disrupt, I would say, shipping in the Red Sea and the gate to the Indian Ocean, you know, Aden and the area that are very strategically located. And they are a Shia terrorist organization, Shia Islamist terrorist organization, and they were trained and armed by the Iranian military intelligence in order to create havoc, not only on the Red Sea also, but also in Saudi Arabia. They were used to fire drones at Saudi oil refineries, and that created a major havoc in terms of Saudi oil exports. And these exports, of course, suddenly the oil prices went up and created an economic crisis. So that was their purpose, to create havoc and chaos and anarchy and basically tell the Saudis, we have a weapon right next to Saudi Arabia in Yemen, and we can use it against you.
I thought it was interesting to kind of to your point about how the Iranian regime and their key lieutenants are just in hiding. They can't even use technology. They can't even use cell phones because they're so fearful following the successful nuclear strikes. But yeah, we remember one of the ways that our friends in Israel went after their proxies, their proxy terror network. We all remember those pagers that blew
the pagers.
Up. Yeah, the pagers blew
the
up.
Pagers blowing up. Yeah. And I think it's very interesting, this pages blowing up in Lebanon with Hezbollah leaders did not teach the Iranian leadership. They never thought they would be hit. But look at this. This is incredible. in less than half an hour, in less than 30 minutes, Israel killed more or less the entire military leadership of Iran. And, you know, some of them were sleeping in their bedrooms. Some of them were in their offices. Some of them were visiting friends. How does Israel know where these people are at any given point? And the most incredible thing is one of them managed to escape.
All right. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We want to talk more about the most incredible thing and how and why. Dr. Kia, stand by. We'll come back to you after this.
Bullet points. I'm Evan Brown. Second Amendment advocates want the U.S. Supreme Court to kill some vampires. While the right to bear arms might include wooden stakes and garlic, the concern is over a very real law in Hawaii that both the Second Amendment Foundation and Firearms Policy Coalition are urging the U.S. Supreme Court to review and ultimately strike. In effect, the law in Hawaii, they argue, turns the entire state into a so-called gun-free zone by disallowing all firearms on private but open to the public property unless the owners specifically allow people to carry. It's called the vampire law because it reminds people of folklore in which vampires can't enter a home uninvited. The centuries-old tradition of allowing firearms on such property by default is what the FPC and SAF argue is being inverted, and that Hawaii's law won't pass the historical test of the Bruin decision. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, we do have the phone lines open for you. If you want to jump in on the conversation here, 406-294-0970 as we catch up with Dr. Merdad Kia here. I've got several topics I want to get to here, and we got to hear the rest of the story. He said the most incredible story just before the break. We're going to get back to that here in just a second. But first, Francis in Big Fork, I think, has a special message for all of our Montana Talks listeners. She wants to share first. Francis, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Yes, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving and enjoy the beautiful scenery on this side of the mountains when the wind blow off all our snow and frost, and nobody appreciates it unless you lived on the other side.
Yeah, you grew up and lived a lot in Plentywood, so you're thankful for no wind right now and seeing some snow already. All right, well, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well, Francis. Thanks for calling in. Okay, back to it here with Dr. Merdad Kia from the University of Montana. Yeah, Dr. Kia, I mean, speaking of living on both sides, you've lived in the United States of America, but you actually grew up in Iran, so that's why it's always interesting to hear your insight on what's going on over there. So, you know, to add to what you were saying about what our friends in Israel were able to do to basically effectively, you know, I don't know if wipe out is an accurate way to sum it up, but just hammer the Iranian terrorist proxy network that operates worldwide, and how they're all in fear right now. They can't even trust a cell phone, a beeper, or anything to communicate with one another. But not only that, but like you look at these successful strikes on the Iranian nuclear facilities by our incredible military and the bomber pilots and crews, and you know, that was authorized by President Trump. Frankly, I mean, it was Israel hammering the air defenses of Iran, et cetera, in the run-up to those strikes, that if it wasn't for that work, those strikes would not have been successful, probably.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. I think Israel basically softened all the possible defensive mechanisms that Iran had by the time our Air Force flew in to target the nuclear sites. Basically, Iran did not have any air defense capability. And you know what this all showed is that all this up and puff with the leader in Iran saying that if you attack us, we will destroy Tel Aviv and Haifa, and we will, you know, destroy the state of Israel, was nothing but just smoke. It was really a very, very lame attempt. And amazingly enough, I have to tell you, Aaron, there are folks in Washington who are so impressed by every speech this guy delivers that, yes, it is a, Iran is now a major power. You cannot deal with it militarily. Well, guess what? You know, in matter of a few hours, the entire leadership of their military had disappeared. We hadn't landed a single person on the ground. The Israelis did not do anything like that either. And instead, by air and by drones, basically they targeted the entire leadership, and it was decimated as a result.
Yeah. I was looking back at a couple of stories that I wrote for our website after a couple of previous conversations with you. Back on May 19th, UM's Dr. Kia talks about the strategic importance of Trump's Middle East trip. And then a month later, on June 19th, UM's Dr. Kia, Iran's weakness exposes the paper tiger. You were talking about the Iranian leadership just getting annihilated. And then whoever still remains is basically in hiding right now. Just before the last break, you were telling us about the most remarkable story is one guy actually escaped. One guy got away. He survived that initial barrage.
Yeah, and he actually drove to a relative home, to a relative's home in Northern Iran. You know, it's depending on which highway you take, it was 6-7 hours where he went. And of course, unlike Tehran, which is at the foothills of Alborz Mountains, this is a very lush area, forested area, next to the Caspian Sea. And he thought he was very safe. You know, it's way out of Tehran. It's hours north of Tehran, and so on and so forth. And just shortly after he arrived at this relative's house, he was hit. He was struck and he was killed, which tells you something about Israeli intelligence capability inside Iran. That capability requires quite a bit of technological know-how, but it also tells you something very fundamental, which is amazing collaboration between Iran's elements within Iran's military with Israel and United States. There are a lot of people who are also fed up with this regime within the Iranian military and security establishment, and they must be collaborating with United States and Israel to expose the very people who have been running the show over there.
Well, and with the Ayatollah in hiding and the people mocking him, calling him, you know, the Persian word
Adi
for
rat.
Yeah, for the rat. Yeah. I mean,
Moosh.
It's...
Actually, they call him Adi Moosh. And Moosh is the same word in Persian as mouse.
As a mouse.
So they call him Adi Moosh. Adi the
he's
rat.
Not even a big scary rat. He's a squeaky little mouse running and hiding.
Exactly.
That's very interesting.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's sneak in. Let's start getting to some of our callers here. We've got Skip in Hamilton listening in. Skip, thanks for the call. Did you have a quick question or comment for Dr. Kia?
I do, Aaron, and thanks for having someone like Dr. Mirdad Kia on. It's like it's like an amazing ability we have, especially here in Western Montana. Anytime he's on, it's like we learn things that you're certainly not going to learn on anything you'll see on the TV on a news broadcast. And so, Dr. Kia, it's wonderful to hear you. And I must ask you about something that's a little different territory, and it has to do with Israel. And is it still possible that there'll be a two-state solution of some sort at the end of that conflict? And if so, where could it be? Or do you think that you're so good at predicting and helping us learn how to watch these things? What are we in for in the future with Israel as far as is that being a solved problem in the future? Or are we going to be looking at two states, and where are they going to be? And anyway, to leave you off. Please have a meaningful Thanksgiving.
You as well, Skip. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, God bless you. Happy Thanksgiving. Dr. Kia, your thoughts?
Yeah, Skip, thank you very much for your call and your kind words. I greatly appreciate it. So I think the question of the immediate and long-term future of Israel and, of course, the Palestinians is very complex. Right now, Israel is just watching the situation in terms of how much Hamas is going to abide by the peace agreement that was signed with President Trump and several important regional leaders like Turkey and the Saudis and the Persian Gulf states and Egypt, Jordan, and so on and so forth. Right now, I think we are in a wait-and-see sort of situation. The Europeans, our European allies, are pushing, as you mentioned correctly, Skip, for a two-state solution. And that's the old sort of solution that the United Nations, after 1967 war, proposed, that is Israel within safe borders, pre-1967 borders, and a Palestinian state based in the West Bank of the Jordan River and the Gaza Strip. To me, that is very unrealistic at this point, the two-state solution, for the following reasons. First of all, when you have a permanent peace between Palestinians and Israelis, you have to have Palestinians in charge who are willing to negotiate a peace treaty. With Hamas, Israel will not negotiate. The Hamas leadership is not even committed to a two-state solution. They're still speaking about the destruction of the Jewish state. So the only alternative is to have Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, based in the West Bank, to negotiate with Israelis. But as many people would tell you, Mahmoud Abbas of Palestinian Authority is very weak, and the system he's running in the West Bank is very corrupt and very nepotistic, and basically doesn't have any muscle to really talk about the permanent peace. Gaza is still in the hands of the Hamas leadership. As far as the Palestinians are concerned, tragically, their situation is really messy at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they've just the Hamas terrorists have just become too ingrained in that society and culture, and they can't let go of terrorism.
Hamas in Gaza, Palestinian Authority in West Bank. I mean, who's running this show in the first place? And so I think the Israelis are not very excited about this prospect. And they have to think about security, security, security. And as long as security is number one, I think peace will not be possible.
Yeah, yeah, great insight. Tim in Billings, we've got 30 seconds before the break. What do you want to share in 30 seconds? But then we can come back to you after the break as well. Good to hear from you.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Thanksgiving, Eve. Just wanted clarification. When Dr. Kia was talking about these groups that are just designed to disrupt, be insurrectionist, to just basically be general pains in the rear end. Was he discussing like Hezbollah, Hamas, or the Houthis, Hezbollah, and these other groups, or was he discussing Antifa and the DNC? Because I needed some clarification. I know he's more of a world politics.
Yeah, I was going to say
it. He sounded like he's talking about domestic politics.
It's Antifa in the streets of America causing chaos here. Great point.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Last week, the American Carbon Alliance submitted a formal letter of support for the Bipartisan SPEED Act. That's legislation, they say, that's designed to bring long overdue clarity, accountability, and timeliness to federal environmental reviews. The bill establishes firm review deadlines, streamlines agency coordination, and prevents the kind of regulatory delay that regularly stalls energy, carbon capture, biofuels, and rural infrastructure projects. The group cite that for ethanol producers, rural communities, and carbon capture developers, predictable permitting isn't a luxury, it's essential. They added that investment stalls when timelines slip, the rural economies lose opportunities when critical infrastructures get caught in bureaucratic gridlock. The SPEED Act is a major step toward ensuring the U.S. can actually build the projects needed to lower emissions, stronger energy security, and new economic growth across the nation. As of Friday morning, the SPEED Act passed committee markup with a bipartisan vote. In other news, the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, along with 15 members of the International Year of the Woman Farmer Working Group, launched an information hub dedicated to celebrating and advancing women in agriculture. The site debuted on October 15th, the International Day of Rural Women, to highlight and connect efforts supporting women in agriculture worldwide. I'm Lane Nortonland.
Hey, if you have a...
Big topics, big ideas, big sky, Montana Talks.
Yeah, when you're talking about all these proxy terrorist networks, I was trying to figure out, is Dr. Mehrdad Kia referring to Hamas and Hezbollah or whatever hot outfit out there? Or was he talking about Antifa on the streets of America? What a great message there from Tim in Billings just before the break. I think you're going to be very intrigued by Dr. Kia's response to that as well. But Tim in Billings, thanks for sticking around because I think you had a quick question to pose to Dr. Kia as well.
I did. Dr. Kia, I have a high school that, you know, has aspirations of possibly going to on to higher education, and I'm worried about her so much because she has an unshakable faith that will guide her. But I look at lots of people, and I worry about their kids, friends of mine, and I worry about them going to the universities and just getting inundated with these ideas that don't serve their best interest, because if I'm not mistaken, in Iran, in your birthplace, some of the most vocal critics of the government prior to the overthrow of, you know, the regime change were liberal college women. And they were promptly rewarded by supporting these ideas, by being executed, fleeing for their lives in exile in other countries, or getting a burqa or burqa style headdresses slapped on them and told to be silent, or they would be, you know, tortured. How do we, and I know that's a hopefully a far cry from what would happen and could happen here, but what advice would you give to parents out there who are sending their children to college to, you know, not turn away from their traditional values and, you know, not allow themselves to be completely brainwashed by
don't be so naive.
Don't have
don't be so naive, right? Don't, you know, all these things may sound nice. So many great questions wrapped into that right there for you, Dr. Kia. So, yeah, I guess you start where you want to, but I do want to hear you talk about, you were telling me during the break how when you saw these anti-Israel, these anti-Semitic mobs taking over college campuses, how it was one of the most shameful things you have ever seen, especially as a college professor, somebody who works in higher education.
As you know, Aaron, I'm a huge advocate of free speech, and I have no problem. I don't have any problem with anybody expressing any opinion for or against. You know, we live in the United States and we are blessed with the right to express ourselves. But when I hear ignorance, and sometimes this ignorance turning into slogans which are really fundamentally calling for destruction and in some ways openly genocide, it becomes very troubling. When you are shouting from the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free, you're not shouting for the establishment of a Palestinian state. You're actually shouting for the destruction of a Jewish state called Israel. River is River Jordan. To the sea is Mediterranean Sea. And I was amazed because the reporter is asking a student at Columbia University, an elite university, what do you mean river? And he said, well, it's the Nile River. I mean, this person does not even know what he is shouting. You know, he thinks his geography needs some working, basically. But they're out there, they're shouting. And I found it appalling that there were actually folks from faculty who joined this. Now, again, every faculty member, every student, every ordinary citizen has his or her opinion, and they are absolutely, they must be, free to express them, but with some basic rudimentary knowledge also. Otherwise, we get into pure emotionalism, and at times, some of these slogans, and I have to tell you, I saw flags of Hamas and Hezbollah being raised on U.S. campuses.
That's
these
right.
Fascist religious organizations. I mean, if that is where we are going, we are in trouble, basically. But to answer to a great question from Tim, there are still universities which are offering wonderful classes and very good environment for learning. And I'm proud to say that one of them is University of Montana in Missoula. And you are more than welcome to send a student from your family to our campus. And we will be there to welcome her and or him. And this is a place where, you know, students came to me and he said, well, there might be a rally. What do you think? And I said, I want you to participate in any rally you want to. You are free to participate. But make sure that when you go to a rally, you know what you are shouting. You know what you're standing for. And it's always good to educate yourself before you start shouting slogans that might be, in fact, very racist and very offensive to a lot of our citizens.
Well, and it's so, thanks to your wise instruction over the years that, yeah, it was great to see that crazy type of nonsense. I mean, there was a small group of off-campus folks who showed up with their stupid River to the Sea chants and their other garbage. But yeah, it sounded like all your students knew better than to go spout that type of nonsense. Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana, he is the director of the Central and Southwest Asian Studies Centers. We're taking your phone calls as well here, 406-294-0970. If you have a quick question or a comment, let's go next to Jason in Polson. Jason, thanks for the call.
Hey, good morning, Eric. Yeah, I was made aware of a video that Ron Paul had done in 2011 in a U.S. Senate hearing on whether or not the United States would or should continue to send aid to the state of Israel. And he made a point that I was not aware of, that the state of Israel, along with the United States CIA, actually created the terrorist organization Hamas. And the reason for that was to overthrow the Palestinian government. So I wanted to make people aware of that. I believe that Ron Paul is a trustworthy source of information. And I think that we need all of the information before we make judgment, or like you said, before we go to a protest, you know, in support of or in against, we need to make sure that we know what we're doing.
And this is one of the, Jason, thanks for calling in on this, because I'd love to hear Dr. Kia's take on this as well. Because, yeah, I think there, Dr. Kia, if I'm not mistaken, you can point back at the long history of Hamas and say, well, early on in Hamas's history, yeah, Israel maybe thought that they might be able to work with the folks that were in this organization. But then some folks will then take that to suggest, oh, Israel supports Hamas. Israel, I mean, that's where it's like, okay. But what's your take on the history of yeah, Hamas? What Jason
so
shared.
Thank you for your call, and there is no doubt that in the beginning when Hamas was created, the government of Israel at the time, this is back in 1980s actually, thought of it as a counterbalancing force to the Palestinian Authority, or what was the PLO at the time, Palestine Liberation Organization, which was mostly based in the West Bank. And why? Because the challenge to Israel was from the old PLO and most recently Palestinian Authority, and they wanted a counterbalancing force to the Palestinian Authority, which is more secular. And initially, it is correct that Israelis thought that it would be a religious movement, but it would not be only a counter sort of balance to Palestinian Authority, but a force that they can deal with. And if they take over Gaza, it will undermine the power of Palestinian Authority. But they never supplied it with arms and training and so on and so forth. Hamas is basically, especially more and more recently, is really surviving based on massive amounts of funds coming from the Islamic regime in Iran and massive training, actually. The only other country or the government which supports Hamas is the government of Qatar in the Persian Gulf. I think the Iranian regime has provided Hamas with something close to $250 to $300 million a year. Terrorism is a good business, basically, as you can imagine. And Qatar, something to the tune of $150 million. And they were living in Qatar until recently when Israel struck. And basically as a warning to Qatar that if you house the Hamas leadership, there will be consequences for you.
Yeah, and well, and then, of course, given your previous comments about the terrorist regime in Iran and what thin ice they're on right now, could if there is an end to that regime in Tehran, does that also eventually mean an end to the Hamas terrorists in Gaza as well? All right, Dr. Merdakia, hold that thought. I want to get your thoughts on the passing of former Vice President Dick Cheney. And anyway, I want to get your take on that. Stand by. We'll come back to you right after this.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So real quick, I'll give you guys my take. This might be one of the subjects of our best of show coming up tomorrow. I'm not sure. I know we're going to have a great show for you, though, but you know, Dick Cheney passed away. Former Vice President Dick Cheney passed away. And, of course, you know, there's been a big rift between the Cheney family and the Trump family, the Bush family and the Trump family. And I was just talking with Dr. Kia during the break, and because I want to hear his take kind of on this and what went through his mind. Because, you know, Dr. Kia, very early on in the Iraq War, was throwing up some cautionary flags, throwing up some red flags. And so, what's interesting is that I think the neocons, as they were described, you know, from back then, they wrongly thought that they could bring American-style democracy to the Middle East. But it is pretty remarkable to see what is going on in the Middle East right now, thanks to President Trump's foreign policy. And I just wonder, if there wasn't such a personal rift between the Cheney families and the Trump family, and the Bush family and the Trump, maybe the Bushes and the Cheneys could recognize the incredible work being done right now in the Middle East by President Trump. Now, Jeb Bush, I think he has actually come out and publicly praised Trump on some things. But where is everybody else at? And it's kind of sad when you think about it with the passing of Dick Cheney and the way his final years ended up having to go, if you ask me. Real quick, hey, you know, we've got so many great veterans listening to this show, over 100,000 veterans all across Montana. Let me tell you about a veteran-owned business, Power Plus Pain Aid. He's a Big Fork, Montana Marine. He started the company. He built the product. And if you go to drinkpowerplus.com, you can get this product in your hands as well. Basically, it's an energy drink combined with pain-relieving vitamins. He's got a new flavor just out now as well. I just tried it. I love the new flavor. But yeah, if you've got aches and pains and you need a little energy too, go to drinkpowerplus.com and use the code FLINT15 and you'll get 15% off your Power Plus Pain Aid. Okay, Dr. Kia, you heard my take. What's yours? What's going through your mind following the passing of former Vice President Dick Cheney?
Yeah, I think you were right on point. I think this all started after Jeb Bush was nominated and in a very unpredictable, you know, sort of move. You have this new populist candidate, Donald Trump, who came in and basically changed the entire configuration. You know, it was supposed to be Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush, and suddenly you have the emergence of this new figure. And the fact that from the very beginning, the supporters of the Bush family, and especially Governor Bush at the time, were basically very upset that that Trump had ruined the party. It never recovered. We never recovered from this. But as far as Secretary Cheney, Vice President Cheney is concerned, you know, he has a long history of serving this country. And at the same time, as you know, I completely oppose the idea of United States Armed Forces coming to Iraq, overthrowing Saddam. Saddam's overthrow, I should say, was a very good news, and nobody shed any tears. But believing that that will actually bring democracy, Jeffersonian Western-style democracy to Iraq, was basically a dream, a pipe dream that would never come true. Look at Iraq today. It's a messy political situation. Democracies do not come by military force. They come from within the political culture of the country. So with all respect and hats off to all our great officers, soldiers, Marines who participated in getting rid of Hitler-like dictator Saddam Hussein, I just did not think it was handled correctly, and the idea that somehow democracy will come to Iraq by us sitting there has proved to be just a nightmare in some ways, with so many casualties on the ground, because we didn't have sufficient number of forces, and we didn't know what we were dealing with. Iraq has never been a nation, a country of three different groups, Kurds, Shia, Sunnis, and others. And it was very difficult from the beginning to watch. And unfortunately, Dick Cheney was one of the people who planned it and pushed for it.
And that's why, as we talked earlier about your birth nation of Iran, why you have always said that it needs to be the people of Iran if there is a regime change. It should not be American boots on the ground doing something like this, or even Israeli, frankly. It needs to be from within, with the people of Iran. Dr. Mehrdad Kia, always such an honor any chance we get to catch up with you. Thank you so much for your time here this morning. And again, a happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
To you as well, and to your wonderful family, and to all your listeners, I wish everyone a wonderful Thanksgiving, and also thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak to your wonderful listeners.
I stopped at the mall in Missoula before the Cat Grizz game on Saturday, and they had a nice farmer's market there. And this one family, they were selling, it was like figs covered in chocolate with green pistachios. And, oh, my goodness, that was a nice little pregame snack. So,
yeah, that was a wonderful day for both campuses. I'm so happy when they come together. They played such a wonderful game. Of course, the result,
it was a great back and forth.
My liking.